Hello again and welcome to Coastal Cardiology and Associates. The Doctor is In, featuring Dr. Greg Silverman. The office is on Elizabeth Street, and you can reach Dr. Silverman at 887-2900. That's 887-2900. Today, we are talking about new treatment for atrial fibrillation.
There you go. Atrial fibrillation. Correct. We are getting through the COVID crisis. I don't think there's anything really new out there at this point that's really groundbreaking. And I thought we'd go back to start talking about cardiology and general health issues, which is where this podcast is actually going to trend once we get through this initial crisis, I think.
All right. And if you are not familiar with atrial
fibrillation,
I have it and I can't pronounce it. That's not good.
But you know how you feel with it.
But explain a little bit what it is.
All right. Atrial fibrillation is an irregular heartbeat that is brought about by abnormal electronic signaling in your atrium. That is the upper chambers of your heart. That's the upper chambers are called the atrium. The lower chambers are called the ventricles. And when the electronics are abnormal, when there's more than one signaling area, it causes irregular heartbeats. It causes irregular signaling and subsequent irregular heartbeats. And the problem with atrial fibrillation, I keep telling a lot of people, is not so much the atrial fibrillation. That is, people can sometimes feel irregular heartbeats, or they generally can feel short of breath. They feel like their heart's going too fast. That's not really generally the problem, because there is medicine to control that. The problem with atrial fibrillation in some patients is that it increases your risk for strokes because the upper chambers don't empty appropriately, and that's the problem, is the increased risk for strokes. And there have been several different treatment options now for people who have atrial fibrillation that either A, can be controlled with their rate, or B, can start on blood thinners, anticoagulants. There's new different types out there. Or C, if they cannot tolerate those, there's a new device called the Watchman device that actually goes into the area of your heart that we think causes the thrombi or the blood clots and actually closes it off. And you can do that through a catheter. None of those require surgery.
And the best time to figure out if you have this irregular heartbeat is usually when you lay down at night.
Right. It's interesting.
What was that?
Right. I keep saying this, but there's about 60% of the people who have atrial fibrillation never knew they had it. They go to their family doctor and he listens to them and says, oh, by the way, did you know you had an irregular heartbeat? And they say, no. There's about 20 or 30% who they know they have it, but they're a little uncomfortable by it, but it doesn't affect generally their daily living. And then there's 10 or 15% of people who say the minute they go into it, they cannot tolerate it. And those people have to be controlled.
It makes you nervous.
It does. Well, it makes you nervous, or you just can't, you just don't like the way it makes you feel. Yeah. You're short of breath, your heart's racing, those kind of things. And those people need to be, those are the ones that we really have to go after very aggressively to say, look, we're either going to get you back into a regular rhythm, which is called normal sinus rhythm, or we're going to do other procedures to get you through this.
And
we
don't call them heart murmurs anymore. Is that something different?
Yeah, that's something different. A heart murmur, as a cardiologist would see that, would be abnormal flow through one of the heart valves, through one of the primary heart valves. Remembering there are four heart valves, and either they can become too tight, they allow blood to go one way, or they become too tight and not allow adequate blood flow, or they become leaky and allow blood flow to go the other way. They're supposed to be one-way valves, and sometimes they're one way and then a leak comes back, and that can cause some problems as well.
All right.
So there's all different types of symptoms associated with both of those, but primarily in atrial fibrillation, we start seeing a higher incidence of atrial fibrillation once people get to be about 70 years old. It does occur in younger people under certain circumstances. Sometimes if you've had too much to drink the next day, we call that holiday heart. Sometimes
holiday heart,
because alcohol is a diuretic and it gets rid of certain electrolytes in your body. And You can have an abnormal heart rate from those. Some certain medicines increase your risk of having atrial fibrillation, like sometimes too much caffeine or generally those caffeine drinks. Also, sometimes the over-the-counter kinds of medicines for sinus infections and for allergies, sometimes those medicines can do it. Those are the two big ones. Some people are more sensitive to other things like chocolate and anything that has
salt.
Caffeine. Salt generally won't do it, but we do see it occasionally when people are under stress. That occasionally happens, but that's generally in the older population as well.
All right. Sometimes when I feel mine coming on, I can take deeper breaths and hold it and exhale, and then take another deep breath.
Right.
Hold it and exhale.
Right.
And that seems to
kind of slow it down.
Yes.
Or it can stop. And then there's the gamut of things. Sometimes people just have it for short periods of time, less than 30 seconds. They'll say, yeah, I knew my heart was racing for a short period of time, and then it went in on its own. It went back to sinus rhythm on its own. And that's not uncommon as well. And generally in those patients, I see a fair amount of those patients. And generally it's interesting. It's women generally, although not always, and they say, yeah, I notice these palpitations, and my job at that point is to say, do you have an underlying reason for this? Is there something wrong with your thyroid gland? Is there something else going on? Are you taking other medicines? Can something else do this? And try to determine if they have a normal heart. If they have a normal heart, I will generally tell those people, you're good. You may have some palpitations intermittently, but I generally don't treat those people because remember, this won't kill you. Atrial fibrillation doesn't harm you unless you have it for a long period of time, unless your heart goes very fast for a long period of time. And when I say long period of time, I mean generally more than 24, 48 hours it takes before you have some problems.
Usually when I'm reading a news article or I have a curiosity bug has bitten me and I'm online, I will see these health ads for different things, and just to make sure I have an idea of what it is, I'll go there. And some of that stuff just seems like I might as well be calling a witch doctor.
Yes. A lot of stuff that you see online is witch doctors. A lot of stuff that you see where they're selling a cure for whatever, whatever that is. It is interesting, in the last about 20 years, there have been the drug companies are not allowed to advertise to doctors anymore, so now they advertise to the general public. And in doing that, you are not only getting advertisements from legitimate sort of medical people, but you're also getting advertisements from really people that are just trying to sell you something. You know, you always say be really careful when you hear from a doctor who's trying to sell you something. That's marginally ethical at best, and at worst it's just it's really bad. And then with all the information out there and all the advertisements out there, it's also hard to find the real truth. Who has what disease? How will this disease affect me in the long term? And what's the best treatment for this? I know certainly in atrial fibrillation there's a lot of the advertisements for the blood thinners in atrial fibrillation, and the drug companies have done a very nice job of scaring the hell out of people that atrial fibrillation is going to cause them to have a stroke, and that's just not always true. And they have also done that with a lot of the other people in medicine as well, to say, oh, by the way, this person needs to be on some sort of blood thinner or he's going to have a stroke, and that's just not always true.
Well, that and the famous words, miracle cure. I've gotten to the point where if I see that, I move on quickly.
You should. You should move on quickly.
All right.
Absolutely.
This will, and it's usually the male enhancement pills that are right around there. But
right.
We've become a society that believes, why do I have to do anything? I can just take a pill or two.
Correct.
And it'll be
correct.
Solved.
It's been interesting, certainly over the last several years, that all of our treatment options, certainly with the most common things that we see, hypertension, diabetes, peripheral vascular disease, all those kind of things, we have gone to promoting general health again. We've gone back to saying, look, here's what your risk factors are. Here's what you can do yourself.
Some of this
to
is your responsibility.
A lot of it is your responsibility, yeah. Especially certainly in hypertension. We all know that if you lose 10 or 15 pounds, your blood pressure will go down. I also believe that salt plays a huge role in that. Mm-hmm. We know that diabetes is the same option. That is, if you lose 10 or 15 pounds, not only will your sugars be easier to control, you may not be a diabetic at that point. So a lot of this really has to do with overall health and overall sort of what you're eating, you know, what you do to yourself. We get into these habits of doing this and this and this, understanding that those are bad. I just put up on my Facebook page about 2 weeks ago, there was a good article in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. And it suggests that people who use olive oil, I think it's 7 tablespoons of olive oil a day. Apparently the Europeans have been using olive oil for way before we
Mediterranean
did. Certainly
diet.
The old Mediterranean diet, right. That those people, if you in America, it works too, that those people who use olive oil rather than any other types of oils actually have a 10 to 15% decrease in cardiac morbidity and mortality, not so much in strokes, but certainly in heart attacks and problems associated with your heart than other people do. I mean, and so look, if you can't find, and we will be doing this over the course of this podcast, which is what I want to get out there, I will start putting more articles on general health, general well-being, not so specific about maybe atrial fibrillation or this disease or that disease, but I will start putting more things out there as I see them of how to live a longer, healthier life. There is enough information out there as far as what works and what doesn't that I think it's time to start putting that out to the general public, and they need to see it.
You're listening to Dr. Greg Silverman, Coastal Cardiology and Associates. The doctor is in. Dr. Silverman's office is on Elizabeth Street. The number is 887-2900. That's 887-2900. The information on... If somebody has some questions or things happen to them and they have an appointment coming up, shouldn't they write down or at least text themselves a message and say, I'm going to bring these things up with Dr. Silverman. This is fresh on my mind.
Right.
And I want to make sure. But you see somebody going to their notes and you know that they have experienced whatever they're talking about before.
And not only that, I look on my role as being a partner in your health. That mm-hmm. is, I am the expert in whatever it is that you're coming in to see me for. Having said that, I can tell you what I think you ought to do, but you have to be part of the solution. You have to take the pills or not take the pills. You have to decide, I am going to be a little bit more aggressive in my own health and how I'm going to direct that health over the long term. And it is your responsibility. I know that when somebody comes in and starts asking me questions about whatever it is that they have, where they've written it down, where they come into my office and actually bring the medicines that they are taking so that they know what it is that they're taking and ask me questions about them, it helps everybody here. I can write down and say, I know what you're taking. I know when you're taking it. I can adjust medicines based on that. Or I can remove medicines, I can add different things. I have to know also what interplays with other things. It's not just one drug does this. We can do that all day long. Well, what happens if I add another drug to that? How does that affect the metabolism of drug A? And the more drugs you have, the more complicated that metabolism is, the more difficult it is to control that, and the side effects are also magnified.
Well, one of the other things you can pick up for the internet is eat these foods to help your heart.
Yeah, okay.
If they're red, eat them.
Eat them, right. Well, that's not really true. There are things that help your heart, yes. We've talked about olive oil. We've talked about limited salt. We've talked about low fats. We have talked about all that. We know that a Mediterranean diet decreases your mortality. We know this. So the Mediterranean diets are out there. That's where you ought to go. I always hate to see it when somebody says, eat this and you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. It's not the way it ought to be. It is a functional change in the way that you operate. And it's a functional change in what you are taking in. I always say, you know, why do people... It's very difficult to get people to change their diets because it is a learned cultural thing. That is that I grew up eating a certain amount of food, a certain type of food. I'm culturally attuned to that. Mm-hmm. It is hard for me to switch into something else, even though I know that it may be better for me than what I'm on. I always say there's a reason why there's Chinese food. There's a reason why there's Mexican food. There's a reason why there's this, because that's the cultural bond in those cultures. It is around food. But not all of Chinese food is good for you. Not all Mexican food is bad for you. Not all, you know, whatever the other types of food, Italian food is great for you. You have to understand how those interplay in your body, and you have to understand it in your own body. It's amazing. There's the other thing that has come out is the different types of diets, and one of the things that my wife and I have been doing is these intermittent fasting diets, which is really more a physiologic diet for the humans. We were never meant to sit and graze from 7 o'clock in the morning until we go to bed at 11 at night. We were never meant to do that. We add fat to ourselves. That's why you get these ring of fats, so that you can go through these starvation times. And as it turns out, those are actually pretty good at losing weight. And it doesn't matter how you do them. There's several different ways of doing it. Pick 8 hours a day to say, I will eat through that 8 hours. That's the only time I'm going to eat. And then I will fast for 16 hours a day if you want to do it that way. Or you pick a day a week where you're not going to eat anything, or you only have water for that day. That's the intermittent fasting way of doing this. And that's a more physiologic way of eating.
I connected with what you were talking about, especially about what you grew up eating. When I moved here, and the fish menu increased
significantly significantly from where you were, from Oklahoma. Yeah.
I never was crazy about baked fish or grilled fish. The only way I had ever eaten fish really was fried.
Yeah,
in cornmeal. Mm. And it took a while to acclimate myself to that. But in order to get the benefits of fish, they now have a pill called fish oil.
Yeah.
The benefits of that is, and there are several kinds. You can get red fish oil, you can get regular fish oil, or you can get fish oil 3.
Right. Isn't it just easier just to eat salmon a couple times a week?
Well, if you can stand salmon, I have not gotten to a point where I can do that. Every time I get a mouthful of that, I think of the time I was fishing, and I grabbed a beer out of the cooler, and it had fish lime all over the top of it, and I, you know, it all came up.
Oh, gosh.
And that's what it reminds me of every time I do that.
Because that's not particularly that's a really meaty kind of fish that has a great flavor to it. It's not really a particularly slimy kind of fish.
Well, see,
I don't know where you're catching yours. I don't know where you're not catching salmon down here.
I ordered some of that high-priced smoked salmon from Alaska. And I ended up giving it to a friend of mine because it's...
Well, you got it. Then that may be off your menu. But there are other types of fish that you can eat. Tuna's pretty good. Your mackerel's got a fairly oily fish. There are some other... Find one that works for you. I was out this whole weekend. We were down on Nighthawk staying at a buddy of mine's cabin, and we were out fishing the whole weekend, and so we brought some trout fillets back, and I'm gonna grill them up tonight. It's gonna be great.
See, trout is kind of fishy for me. I like flounder, redfish.
Yeah.
Ling.
Yeah, we had a hard weekend this weekend. It was
you did
because the weather was so iffy.
Beautiful.
It was sunny and great. The temperature was great. But the winds on Friday afternoon were coming out of the east almost, and then by Friday night they turned around to the north, and the fish just weren't there. I'm out. I went walking. I'm a fly fisherman, and I went walking for I know on Friday afternoon I walked about 3 miles in the water, and then Saturday I walked another probably 2.5 miles in water, and there was not much fish there. I tried it. I really worked hard this weekend.
The couple of times that I really gotten excited about fly fishing is when I was in Florida doing that bone fishing thing. And what I really like about that is they're there for about 20 minutes and then they move on. And you can either chase them or a new group will come along.
You got one chance. That's
yeah.
Right. You got one chance. And there's,
but it is fish on.
I say there is 1,000 different ways of not catching a fish when you're fly fishing, only one way to catch one. And I've made all the about 1,000 mistakes every different way. And I actually had, I did okay on Friday night, but Saturday they just weren't there. And this morning it was too windy to go out. It was pretty windy out there this morning. We had fun anyway.
You know, I mean, you hung catch out with small the fish on a fly rod. And
it was great. Nice. Bone fishing is my zen. That's the, I've got a place down in the Bahamas.
That's like a gift from God.
It is where you go to find that. It is where you go to find inner peace.
This is Dr. Silverman. The doctor is in Coastal Cardiology and Associates. The office is on Elizabeth Street. And the phone number is 887-2900. The new treatments in atrial fibrillation. Was there anything else?
I can't let you go without this. That is, in those people who can't tolerate the atrial fibrillation, the irregular heartbeats, or it's very difficult. Some people, it's very difficult to control their heart rates. There are new types of what we call ablations. That is where a specialist, an electrophysiologist, that is a specialist in irregular heartbeats, can go in and with small burns, burn the areas of abnormal electronics in your atrium and stop this atrial fibrillation. That's called an ablation, and that is very common nowadays. It generally works. Sometimes you have to go back 2 or 3 times to have it done, but that generally works. The other ones for those people who, for whatever reason, either can or won't tolerate an ablation, but can't tolerate the anticoagulations, there is a Watchman device that is a metallic, like a bird's nest that you can put in the what's called the left atrial appendage. It's a part of the left atrium that we believe is where the blood clots come from, and you basically put it in there, and it occludes the left atrial appendage, and you can stop anticoagulation. You don't have to worry about strokes after that.
And does it work sort of like a pacemaker?
No, it's just a little small little metal ball, I guess is the best way to describe it. It can expand and it occludes the left atrium. So it's just kind of a bird's nest would be the best thing to describe it, but that's not exactly what it's a little more complicated than that. It does have to go in via catheter, but generally it's about a one-day procedure, and I've got several patients who just can't tolerate the blood thinners. That's how you reduce the risk of having a stroke from the atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. Is you're supposed to put people on blood thinners, and if you can't tolerate that for whatever reason, a lot of people have certain types of GI hemorrhages. A lot of people just can't tolerate the medicines. That's a good question. That's a good procedure in those patients. And we do that. Some of my partners do that at Coastal Cardiology.
Dr. Silverman is the doctor, and the doctor is in. His office is on Elizabeth Street, and the phone number is 887-2900. So we've talked about new treatments. We've talked about how important your diet is, and we've briefly hit on, you know, it's your health. It's your life. You got to go into partnership with your doctor.
Right. And I also say there's a lot of things that now that we're talking about this that we can talk about in future episodes of this podcast, which are how to get along with your doctor. What is your doctor looking for? And if you can't get that results from your doctor, move on. If you don't feel like your doctor is listening to you, or that you're not getting the sort of the feedback from your doctor as a partnership that you want, you got to move on. It's the guys. and the women are probably not going to change the way that they see patients and feel about patients. And if you feel for some reason that you're not being adequately treated, maybe time to start looking for other people.
All right. The exercise, which is, it should be more popular than it is, and maybe it'll get more popular because we just went through a time when we want to get out of the house, and walking, I think, has become more popular, and riding bicycles has become more popular.
Right.
And for you not to see that, gosh, I feel a lot better this afternoon because I worked out some this morning.
Correct. It's the longevity kind of things. There are, and we ought to, in, I think certainly in America, we always think of everything as a competition. And I don't think exercise as you age is a competition. I think exercise as you age is a functionality thing. That is, it continues to make you more functional for as long a period of time as possible. And as I see all these guys, I work out at a gym, and there's one part of the gym is for all the guys lifting weights. And that's sort of a generally a young man's game. There are some guys in their 40s and 50s who are doing it. But over time, I think the best option as you age is the functional types of things, the aerobic kind of exercises, the treadmills and the non-jarring kind of things, the elliptical trainers and the swimming and the bicycling. That's where all that comes into play. And even just walking, just getting your heart rate up to about 70% of whatever the maximum rate ought to be for about 15 or 20 minutes a day, it's remarkable how much benefit that has over the long term. It's remarkable how much better you will feel and how much more you will be able to do just in your daily life. You'll say, man, I can go do this more often. I can go whatever it is that you want to do. I can climb those stairs to my concert easier. I can be functional around the house. I can still mow the yard. I can get out there and keep doing this. I can go out and hang out with my kids or my grandkids. Those are the kind of things that I'm talking about. This is where yoga comes into play and stretching comes into play and really functional types of exercises that increase your range of motion and increase how far you can go during those.
You want to work on that core. I was talking to Albert Kessler at Hess Fitness Products.
Terrific.
You and he are good friends.
Very good friends, yes.
He and I are good friends.
Yeah.
And Albert said, he asked me how my balance was. And I said, it's, you know, kind of shaky sometimes. I find myself losing my balance easier than I ever have. And he said, which way are you falling? Forward, backward, or side to side? And 99% of the time, it's side to side.
Right. And generally, that's a weakness in certain leg muscles.
Yes.
And you can work on those. That's the whole point of this, is working on that type of thing, where understanding what your potential problem is and working on correcting that problem, making those muscles stronger. One of the best exercises for knee pain and for those kind of things is just strengthening the muscles around your knee. Okay, that seems pretty simple. That seems okay. And then the other functionality things, the falling times of things, is strengthening the muscles in your legs in certain ways. This is where getting a trainer or getting somebody who understands what it is you can do. I can tell you this, that going on the internet is a good place to find really good exercises for whatever is functionally abnormal in
right.
you, that is a pretty good place to go. And there are people out there who are can train you online, basically.
It's amazing because when you're younger, you can pretty much put pressure on the outside of your foot and it will push you
back. Wherever you want to go.
It will push you back to where, oh, there's gravity. However, as you age, those outside muscles kind of want to take the day off. I have a rowing machine that I try to spend 15 minutes a day on, and then I take a rest, but I'm still sitting on it. I've got to get the TV hooked up in there so I can watch it longer. But it's helping, I think, in my breathing, and that's one of the most annoying things when I still mentally feel like I'm 50, but my legs and my lungs remind me, oh, no.
You're not. Right.
Let's get that spring chicken thing out of here. Because
right. Because it does take some. I learned a couple of valuable lessons. One, I was boxing, and I ruined my shoulder and had to get it operated on. So I can no longer do that. I'm not willing to do that again. But that was a great, really great way of exercising. I really enjoyed it. So now I have to figure out something else that I can do that is non-traumatic so that I can continue to do what it is that I want to do. You know, I can continue. I really like walking flats. I really like that. I could do it all day yesterday and Friday, but that's only because
fishing.
On the off days, yeah, on the off
that's
days,
tough.
It is. Try walking in wading boots.
It'll suck your legs in.
Right. And there are places where the sand is not as hard and you can fall in, and you have to be aware that you can do this, and you have to continue to do that. But the only way I'm able to do that is by being functional in other ways, is continuing to exercise those muscles so that I can say, look, there's a little hole here. I'm okay. I'm not going to trip and fall every time I do this.
It's funny that you brought that up. A friend of mine took me wading, and he had a pair of waders, came all the way up to my chest. He said, okay, now, before we do anything else, I want you to do this. And he showed me how to put my arms under the shoulder straps and release it.
Get it off.
I said, well, I know how to take them off. He said, you never know when you're going to get them full of water. I stepped off in a hole, and I was over my head, and I had just exhaled. Not a good
Not
time.
Not great, yeah.
To go underwater. But I went, holy mackerel, and I stuck my hands inside, and I
out you go.
Yeah.
I did that once too. I was fishing right off here off the Oso, and I stepped into a mud hole.
That's where I was.
And I could not get out. And the guys on shore were laughing at me. I mean, I'm sitting there.
Yes.
This is quicksand here. And, you know, you take your wits about you and do what you need to do to get out. But if I had not been as functional as I am, that would have been a different turn of events.
Coastal Cardiology and Associates, the doctor is in, featuring Dr. Greg Silverman. A few fishing tips along the way, too, and what to look for on the internet. Dr. Silverman's office is on Elizabeth Street. The phone number is 887-2900, and I will see you next week.
We will see you next week, and we will be here tomorrow for the radio show. Can't wait.